Decatur, Texas. Y'all seen this coat? Okay. It's a little hot.
Take it off.
No, I gotta stay. My hair'll fall off. I don't know about these lights. My name's Chris Kramer, and I'm a drug addicted alcoholic. In fact, I don't like these lights at all. Maybe they could raise the house lights just a hair. I can't see them. I can't see. I can't talk to people I can't see. Whoa! You know, we got a guy down in the hill country where I come from. He's always talking. When he speaks, he always talks about nothing. There's no big deal. I wish he could be here tonight. This is as tall as the cotton gets out here. I know, no pun intended. You can't hear it? How's that? Oh, you won't have, I'll get cranked here a minute. You won't have any problem. These poor people up front will be moving back quick. This is absolutely the coolest. I want to thank everybody that had anything to do with getting me to come up here and do this. I was asked about a year ago to do this, and it's been an honor, something I've looked forward to continually. Tony's been my host this weekend, and he's carted me around and took me rock hunting this morning, and I know. We got some good minerals. Phoenix is great for minerals, and it's a neat honor to be here. I want to thank all the Texas Buckaroos. Give it a big high, huh? Yay! I got to tell you, CA is alive and well in Texas. If you let me do it, like to say hi to everybody outside that didn't get in, and welcome to the coolest thing I've ever done. I need to share with you. Also, real quick before I forget, I want to thank the family members for coming to this. Some of you guys can't imagine, you know, alcoholics and addicts, we have a tendency to bond, but, you know, some of our significant others that aren't one of us, you know, they put up with a lot of horse shit with us, you know, and I had the opportunity last year to finally get a chance to make amends to my first wife, who I flat put through the ringer, folks. Sitting across the table from her in Houston, Texas, and first time I'd seen her in about 15 years, and was able to do as we are taught to do, make amends. And I told her what I thought I owed her amends for, and she just sat there with tears in her eyes and said, "You don't got a clue, do you, buddy?" You know, I didn't realize that she'd been taken in an ambulance to a psych ward as a direct result of a nervous breakdown that I caused with my drinking and drugging. And I didn't know it for 12. Thank you, families, for sticking with us. You know, the miracle of this program is that if we do the things we're supposed to do, the desire to use will leave us, and we recover from cocaine addiction and alcoholism. I mean, that's a given. The problem is that so many of us don't get it. It's got to be very despairing for us. You know, I'm a chronic relapser, folks. I'm 8 years in and out of the fellowship, and I could not get sober. And a lot of people put up with a lot of my shenanigans, and I'm eternally grateful. They're still putting up with my shenanigans. I need to tell you, I've said this before, and I'm probably irritating some people, but what this women's deal in Phoenix? I mean, what is this with these women in this place? I mean, I need to get out of Ingram more often. I can promise you that. This is the best looking women I have ever seen in my life. I've been caught more than once out by the pool catching flies, you know, and it's like, you know, Ingram's kind of a small little town. We got a lot of sheep in Ingram, and there's a 12-step program for that too. I need to tell you. Some of y'all may ask to be asked to speak at that conference next. No, but I tell you, I've called my wife about 10 times, and I told her last time I just listened. You know, we're about an hour from the airport, and she's got to come pick me up. And I said, "Jeannie, come pick me up." I told her the time. And I said, and and lose the boy. You know, this is going to be something else. I tell you, I miss her. This is the coolest. Some of you are going to love what I've got to say tonight. And some of you are going to leave this room feeling like you just had a spanking. I love Cocaine Anonymous, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous. I love the 12 steps. They saved my life, and I am as passionate about them as anybody I've ever known. It's been an interesting thing coming to Cocaine Anonymous this weekend, coming for the workshops and getting to meet so many of you. A lot of times when I speak in public at CA conferences or in AA groups or whatever, you know, there's a lot of middle-of-the-road stuff out there, and we all know that, and a lot of stuff disguised as recovery that's horseshit, that's not. And so, you know, I come to these big conferences, and if you're going to hear horseshit, you're going to hear it at a large conference, because there's 15,000 people up here that everybody wants to be entertained, and that's what you're going to... I got to tell you, we didn't hear it this weekend. And you ought to, right? From the first speakers that I heard and through the workshops, and I guarantee you everybody was on the page and everybody's taught. So really, the truth of the matter is, the very few people that I'm going to piss off. I mean, I don't know why. They introduce me all the time all over the country when I speak. It's always just Chris Raymer, just that controversial speaker from Texas. You know, and Chris Raymer's always a controversial. I'm controversial for two reasons. Because I don't make any bones about cussing from the podium. I do that. So do some of you. So I heard this weekend. I don't have a... But I'm the controversial one, you know, because I'm going to talk about what comes out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that we have the power to help others. The book says that we have recovered and been given the gift, being able to help other alcoholics and addicts get sober. And I believe if we do what the book says, that we can turn the tide on this terrible thing called cocaine addiction. I'm just passionate about it, folks, and I got to tell you, I hear somebody watering it down, you know, trying to ease it in underneath the newcomer. You know, we don't want to scare anybody off. We need to. Come on, baby. I know. Well, I just, you know, I'm going to talk about it some tonight. I finally, after a suicide attempt in 1987, landed in a room full of people that loved me enough to tell me the truth. They loved me more, and they cared more for me and my sobriety and my relationship with God than they did my sensitive goddamn little feelings. You see? Is this mine? Is this one with a Spanish fly in it? I know. I love Spanish fly, huh? I was 8 years trying to get sober, folks, and I got to tell you today, November 13th, 87 was my last drink and my last drug, and I'm tickled to death to have that. I need to give a couple of second disclaimer here for even those that are not buying the controversial stuff. I'm here for one reason only, to share my experience, strength, and hope with the drug addict or the alcoholic that's in this room. If the family members are here and they want to be entertained by this, that's wonderful. But I'm going to just tell you straight. AA and Cocaine Anonymous today are full of people that don't need to be here. And we've heard some other speakers this week talk about this. You're welcome. you're welcome. Just be careful what you say in my meetings. Because there's a lot of people dying because of your flippancy. You see, I am the person on page 21. I am the real cocaine addict. I am the real alcoholic. Let me try to run something by you here, because some of you guys are not going to be relate to what I got to say. Chris Raymer, he's too passionate. Goddamn, if I'd walked in my first meeting and he'd been yelling at me like that, I'd have walked out. I don't do this in an AA meeting. I do this at a conference to try to explain where I'm coming from. But y'all need to hear this is about perspective. For years in the fellowship, before I got sober, I would come into the fellowship, and I would come into these rooms, my first attempt in about 1980 to try to get sober, up in North Texas. They didn't have CA at that time in North Texas, that's for sure. But I'm trying to get sober from cocaine addiction and alcoholism. And I'm walking into these rooms, and a lot of people were in there talking about their kids and stuff. Now I can appreciate this, but you know, they're talking about their kids, they're talking about their kids, and I couldn't relate because I've never had kids. And for years in adulthood, basically it's been, you know, if you've got kids, just remember who's the adult, spank them, and everything's going to be okay. But I've never had kids. So You know where I'm going with this. It's about 7 years ago, God sees fit to reunite me with a girl that I dumped in high school, right? And my high school sweetheart, I left for alcohol and cocaine. Not that any of y'all have ever done that. And unbelievable. Unbelievable. And 20 years later, we end up getting married. Can you believe that? And there's a little 5-year-old boy in the deal. Yeah. And that's what I said. Oh, isn't that cute? Where do you wind it up? You know, what do you feed it? Oh. About 2 months after I moved into the house with Jeannie back down in Ingram, I moved from the big city and moved into Ingram. And 2 months later, after being with that family for a short period of time, she comes out looking for me, and I'm a big bicycle enthusiast. A lot of y'all know that. And I'm out there underneath my work bench. And she comes out, she says, Chris, what are you doing under there? And I says, nothing. I'm in a fetal position underneath that workbench. That kid has pushed every friggin' button I've got. 5 years old, and I know who's wearing the pants in that family, and I don't know what to do about it. You with me? It's about perspective. I'm going to tell you one more quick one. You guys, a couple of years ago, I talked over at the Edge, and I told you about a little bicycle mishap I had with a deer, right? I'm the only guy I know that has ever run into a deer on a bicycle. I can't believe I'm telling all of y'all this story. I mean, I got giving y'all ammunition to shoot me with later, but I got to tell you, up to the moment of impact, and I hit the asphalt, let me tell you something, it was a terrible thing. Up to that point, I loved Bambi. I mean, the deers, I mean, we just... I now own a hunting license. I mean, my whole attitude towards deer has changed. I'm going to tell you, it's about perspective, folks. You with me? And a lot of the cats that are sitting in these rooms in our fellowships, they don't come with alcoholism and drug addiction from the same point of place that I come from. They've got the power of choice. They are not the person on page 21. They, given sufficient reason, the little wifey food got tired of them coming home, spending all the money, got a little trouble, whatever. They said, oh, that's it for me. I'm going to put the plug in the jug and everything's going to be okay. And listen, folks, if you can do that, you're welcome in our fellowship. Come visit. But understand, newcomers, please, who you're listening to in these meetings may not be one of us. For the real alcoholic or the real drug addict, your life depends on a spiritual experience. Yes. Oh, Lord, I tell you. And I guess, that's probably the most controversial thing I'm going to say from the podium. You know, everybody says, everybody's welcome. You are welcome. But I'm just saying, be careful as a newcomer what you're listening to in these meetings. Because if it's not coming out of the big book, it's horse shit. Our fifth tradition says that our main object, our primary requirement, is to help other alcoholics stay sober by carrying one message. This message. Page 17 says that we've got a common problem, folks. Alcoholism, drug addiction, we've got a common problem. But we also have a common solution. You see, and what we've done over the years is not qualify the member when they got here. Oh, you're having trouble with cocaine. Welcome. Well, we need to take it a little step further. Are you just a hard cocaine user? I mean, folks, there are those idiots out there. I mean, I see them. I work in a treatment center, for heaven's sake. I do clerical work for a facility, and we get to see thousands of people come through there. And I get to see a lot of cats that don't need to be there. Why? Here's what the big book says an alcoholic or a drug addict is. It says we got a thing called a moderate drinker or drugger. I won't even take time to talk about that. We got nobody moderate anywhere in here. Jesus. And we got these cats that are called hard drinkers, right? Hard druggers. These cats, they drink a lot, they're party animals, you know, but given sufficient reason, they can walk away from this crap. You with us? Got a little problem with the health. Got a little problem with the job. Got a little problem with a little wifey poo stick. Again, they can walk away from it. And then it says, the next paragraph says, but what about the real alcoholic? What about the real cocaine addict? I'm hip with your third tradition. But now listen to me now. Listen to me. The only requirement to come into these rooms is a desire not to use. I'm hip with that. But if the guy sitting in your meeting doesn't want to use, but he's not one of you, he's not going to come at you with the same perspective. And that's the only point I'm trying to make. I'm not saying anybody is not welcome. Everybody is welcome. But be careful what you're listening to. We got people killing people on a daily basis in our fellowships. Folks, let me just talk about it a little bit here. We get right down the pike. I'm speaking in fucking tongues already. I don't know. It's going to be a long night. In the next couple of weeks, Alcoholics Anonymous will celebrate its 65th birthday. Yes. And I got to tell you, from a historian standpoint, from somebody who loves the history and has had good sponsorship and studied this stuff, I need to look at the archives. And we did some workshops this weekend, and we talked about a lot of this stuff. But let me just tell you straight: in the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, we had a lot of people getting sober. If you're reading the prefaces to the second edition, it talks about a 75% success rate. Y'all with me? If you dig a little deeper, you'll find that there were areas in the Midwest that had nearly 100% success rate. People getting off the alcohol and the drugs by coming in and working these programs. Great success rate back then, folks. I guarantee you right now in the state of Texas today, success rate hovers around 8%. 8% of the people coming into Cocaine Anonymous, Alcoholics Anonymous, these are staying sober a year. The rest of the cast, it's a revolving door. You know, guys, I guess I've done this on every tape I've ever done. Every talk I've ever done, I've talked about it. Everybody wants to let everybody off the hook and look the other way. Well, you know, for years we heard it. It's them damn crack addicts. Oh, it's a breakdown of the family unit. It's this, it's that. Oh, it's the welfare system. Oh, it's this. Oh, it's them damn court system. You know, everybody's got a reason why they think the success rates are so low. Folks, I'm going to tell you, as early as 1976, delegates of Alcoholics Anonymous understood and talked about it from the podium, the fact that the message that the newcomers early on were getting is not the same message we're getting today. Yeah. I need to tell you straight that 60 years ago, you would not have found one of those alcoholics telling some guy coming off the street who's absolutely burnt from the drugs and the alcohol that he needed to go take a nice warm bubble bath and light a bunch of candles. That may be a wonderful, wonderful thing. I can assure you that there wasn't one of those buckaroos out there in the train station looking for drunks and addicts, listen to me, that was telling them when they got back to the clubhouse to stand up in front of a mirror and do some positive fucking affirmations. What they were saying was, are you ready to go find God? Because we need your help in the trenches. And oh yeah, you're sober 24 hours. It's time for you and me to go out there and try to get another drunk to work with. We were all staying sober, folks, because we didn't have time to worry about this other stuff. We understood that it wasn't us fixing our... Let's just get this straight right now. Alcoholics Anonymous and Cocaine Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, our sister fellowships, let me tell you this. This is not a self-help program. We don't keep ourselves sober. If I could keep myself sober, by God, I'd have done it years before I lost those businesses. Before I harmed all those women and scared all those kids and damaged my family, I'd have gotten myself sober. Now, I'm going to tell you right now from the podium, I love therapy. I'm a product of some great therapy. And if you've got the time and the money and you can afford it, if you can't, you come see me and I'll try to figure out a way to get you there. A therapist can fix what's wrong with you in lots of areas. You with me? But let me tell you this. This fellowship, therapy, treatment centers, the church, no human power can get me sober. Oh. It took me 8 years to figure out, folks. 8 years in and out of the fellowship trying to get sober, wondering how come you could get sober and I couldn't get sober. Why? Because you were doing the damn work and I wasn't. It's just as simple as that. Man, oh man, oh man. I do clerical work for this treatment center, right? And we get the cats that get to come in and we get to do a little big book with them on the side. But one of the things that we get to do, we track them when they leave treatment and we get to monitor them and we get to see who's staying sober and who's not. One of the reasons that I get so passionate about this is because every patient that comes through there, I get a chance to sit down and drink coffee with and visit and I get to talk to them. I say, hey, listen, let me ask you a couple of questions. Did you ever try Cocaine Anonymous? Well, yeah. Well, did you ever try Alcoholics Anonymous? Yeah. Well, yeah. Narcotic? Yeah. Yeah, I tried the 12 steps. It didn't work. Well, it beats the hell out of me, you know, because I sobered up in AA. I mean, I just walked in the doors and the 12 steps worked for me. He says, Chris, I know it'll probably work for some people, but you guys stick with me. But I can't stand going to the meetings. He says, come on, brother. Get it. Like I hadn't heard it before. Tell me why you can't stand going to the meetings. Without exception. War stories and people pissing and moaning about their problems. Folks, the problem is not getting people to our fellowships. This is the only game in town. The only thing that we know that works is the 12-step movement. The only thing that we know from my standpoint in that treatment center that's going to work for a crack addict is Cocaine Anonymous. Now, you need to hear me tonight. The only thing that will work for a real crack addict is the 12 steps. It's Cocaine Anonymous. Now, we know that. We know it works. The history shows the success rates. We know that the people come in and do the work, they stay sober. So why won't they stay in the fellowship that we love so much? And guys, here's where the grind comes in. If you can get through this little rough spot here, all the controversy will be over. This is the grinder right here. Because we're the most selfish, self-centered sons of bitches in the world, and we don't want to piss anybody off, and we want to continue to come to the meetings and use them as a dumping ground for our goddamn problems. Let me run something by you. Let me ask you a question real quick. We just talked about it in the little preamble that the nice lady read. You know, we talk about it in every CA meeting. You know, we thought we were drinking because of the husband and the wife, but that's not the truth, is it? How many of you guys in here did a whole bunch of cocaine when you were in a great relationship? How many when you were in a shitty relationship? How many with a skinny woman? How many with a big old beefy one? Yes, I love them. Yes. How many when you had a great job and like made a lot of money? How many of you was piss poor and didn't have no money? How many when you had that big Lincoln Town car? How many when you was riding a bicycle? Well, we just determined that your external circumstances doesn't make a goddamn bit of difference whether you drink or drug or not, haven't we? So why, dear God, family, do we continue to do it? Piss poor sponsorship comes to mind. All through this weekend, I have been tapping some of you real big beefy boys on the back, telling you could come up real close to the. As soon as I give you the high sign, y'all move real close, okay? This group would turn on me in a heartbeat. I can tell already. Listen, folks, I'm not speaking from any spiritual mountain out there, but some of you guys are grinding your fucking teeth. You think, oh, look, who does he think he is? I'm an alcoholic and addict, and nearly died in this fellowship by walking in these. Let me give you a little rundown of my story real quick. But let me tell you this: I have pissed and moaned in more meetings than I can count. I'm not telling you not to do something that I myself am guilty of doing. But let me tell you the same story that I hear from thousands of alcoholics and addicts out there, and it applies to me so succinctly. I started drinking, you know, the old story, when I was a kid drinking some brewskis, and I was a functioning alcoholic for years. I was in the food business. I was a cook, and goddamn, the cook. I wasn't a cook because I liked to cook. I was a cook because I liked to drink, for Christ's sake. And they let you drink on the job. And the women are babes. And that's the truth. And I cooked for 15 years. But somewhere around 79, I'm back in Kerrville trying to get sober, sort of. I'm drunk. And a merchant marine friend of mine that I'd cooked with, he was waiting tables when he was off the ship. He called me from San Diego where he said, he says, Chris, I'm coming across the country. He says, I've got some stuff I want you to try. And I said, what is it? He said, Chris, I can't talk, but it's cold here in San Diego. It's like, if our lines had been busted, like they wouldn't know what we were talking about, right? And so he got to Kerrville and he said, Chris, you've got to try this stuff. This is cocaine. Now, guys, I've done every drug. I've done LSD. Every drug in the world I've done, but the cocaine kind of. I got Guys, I got hair standing up on my arm. I mean, I'm just, you know, he sat there and he didn't. He had a little line, a little bump, and we snorted. I said, what do you do? And he showed me, and I bumped it up, and he was sitting there like that. That's pretty good shit, isn't it? And I'm sitting there like, I said, God dang it, that hurt like hell. That's blurred my nose, you know, what did you do? And I just snorted glass, for Christ's sake. What is it? And then I went numb, you know? And then what cocaine does took place in Chris Raymer. And guys, let me tell you something. I sat right there with that glazed look, and he said, Chris, you know, I got to go. You know, I got my little, I got to go. I'll see you. And I got out of his van and got in my truck, and I sat there, and I sat there. You know, I'd never felt anything like it. And I went back to my apartment. I had a date that night. I said, hon, I can't make it. I got something came up. And I went back to my apartment. I took off all my clothes. And I got a plan, you know? I got a plan. Because I got to figure out how to get some more of this stuff. And I got to tell you, within a month, I'd hawked my telescope and my stereo and my key. Guys, I've been drinking for years and never did that. Never hawked nothing to get a beer. Nothing. You know? But I'm... Oh, shit, I'm off the page. You know, and everybody's saying, Chris, you seem so different. What's up? You seem so changed. I am. I mean, I started 2 new businesses, and I'm doing this, and I'm staying up half the night. I mean, this stuff, man, alcohol was slowing down for me. I couldn't drink as much as I used to. And now I can I can drink all night, and it's just a wonderful life. And I ended up back in Houston, and things got tough, and I got married, and I went to North Texas, and things got tougher. I've got 2 businesses. I've had 2 little barbecue restaurants and a little catering company. I lost them all to on the books. It was poor business stuff. I snorted them up. And I got to tell you, my story's not as bad as a lot I've heard, and I guarantee you I didn't go as low as some of you guys did, but this was nightmare on hell. This was absolutely nightmare on Elm Street. I could not not drink, and I could not not do cocaine. And I'm out of money, and things are getting tough, and end up in North Texas, finally at an AA meeting, trying to get well. And I walk in the AA meeting and I say, listen guys, I'm having a little problem with cocaine, I'm having a little problem with alcohol, and can you guys help me? And they said, well, absolutely sure. And what did they do? They tried to do the same thing that I see so many of us in the fellowship trying to do. They tried to scare me into their fellowship. And I was young at that time, guys. I was a lot, and they tried to scare me in with their war stories. Now, they call them first step meetings in Texas. I don't know what they call them over here. What we were supposed to do was talk about the disease and qualify us and see if we were supposed to be here. But that's not what we did. What we did was get down to brass tacks, and everybody wanted to tell their stupid goddamn war stories. Now at the time, I'm a functioning alcoholic and addict. I've still got a job, and I'm still driving a car. You with me? But these guys get in there and they start telling all their war stories. Well, I've had 3 DWIs. Next guy. Well, I've had 4 DWIs and been to prison. Well, I beat my wife, and I've been to jail, and I've been, it's like, check, I don't have DWI. Check, I don't beat my wife. Check, none of this stuff's happening to me, so I can't possibly be one of you. You with me? After a few weeks, I get up and leave. God, guys, it's the only place in the world that I can get sober, but I can't stay there because I can't identify. Why can't I identify? Because we won't talk about the internal condition. We're too busy telling the stupid-ass war story. What I want to know is, can anybody just wake up in the morning and not want to do a bump? Can anybody wake up in the morning and just know that tonight they're not going to have a beer in their hand? Can you tell me if the obsession will ever leave? Nobody ever talked to me about that. But I just keep coming back, and I come back again, and then we're going to get another round of stupid war stories. Guys, there's no chapter in the back of the book called End of Scare. There's a chapter in the back of the book called A Vision for You. And what we're supposed to try to do is to pull the newcomer with a vision of how cool life can be in sobriety. Now you don't have to. You can't scare me. God damn it, I've eaten out of dumpsters in Houston, Texas. You what are you going to do? Tell me some chicken shit scary sort of get out of my face. The book tells me I'm not even going to remember my own scary stories, much less yours. Unbelievable. I leave. I continue to take antidepressants. I continue to see therapists. I continue to guys, I got to tell you, somebody was asking me the other day about this antidepressant deal. I started taking antidepressants when I was very, very young. When I was in high school, practically, when I started first taking antidepressants. It was just out of high school. And I got to tell you, all the antidepressants that some of you guys in here are taking, I did the test stuff on. I can promise you that. Because my depression was so thick it wasn't even funny. And nobody ever bothered to tell me that the depression was the number one symptom of alcoholism and drug addiction. You know, I got to tell you, amazing things took place in my life. When I got sober, a cool thing happened. The depression left. Imagine that. There was one antidepressant, though, that came in the form of a suppository, and it was a pretty cool antidepressant, I got to tell you. I don't know if it did anything with the well, never mind. I don't know. I went back into Alcoholics Anonymous because there was nothing else to do. The antidepressants weren't working. Suicide was on my mind on a daily basis. And I did the same thing that so many of you did. I spent the next 8 years in and out of the fellowship. I'd go in, stay 3 months, pull my hair out. I can't stand it. Leave. Go back in. Jesus Christ. Stay a month. Leave. I couldn't stand it. Every time you go in, why? Because of the stupid pissing and moaning. Guys, you know, I'm coming apart at the seams, and I'm so afraid that I'm going to use today, I can't stand it. And so I'm going to walk into this room, and hopefully somebody's going to pull me with a vision, right? But no, we don't have time to talk about what's going on with me and this disease and how I can overcome alcoholism and drug addiction, because we're too busy talking about your goddamn divorce. You with me? Made some of you uncomfortable there, didn't you? Listen, guys, I'm going to say it now, and I'm going to say it again before I finish here. This fellowship is not therapy. Alcoholism, and this is a spiritual program of action. Please. Well-meaning therapists have sent you to us for years believing that we could just come into these fellowships and talk about anything we want to. And I'm going to just say this real quick. The goddamn arrogance of us to think that we can do that. We've got one job on this earth to do, and that's to help an alcoholic and addict sober up. What the hell are we doing trying to fix every problem in the world? You need to go back to that therapist and get your money's worth. I'm telling you, the therapy is the greatest. If you need a good lawyer, go find a good lawyer. You with me? If you're having trouble with your PO, go take it up with the legal system. Go talk to your PO about it. But you ain't drinking because of your PO, and you ain't drinking because of your wife, and you ain't drinking because you ain't got a job, and you ain't drinking because of any of this other happy horse shit. You with me? So why do you have to come into my meetings and talk about it incessantly? I don't know. When we the early days of Alcoholics Anonymous, folks, AA meetings were a pep rally. We would get together with the buckaroos, and we would get the newcomers, and we would get together. We'd talk about the cool things that were happening. We would bear witness, like the book asked us to do. We would share our personal testimony of how cool life was at being sober. And then we would get together, and we'd get some literature, and we'd go out to the bus station and the Salvation Army and try to carry that message to other alcoholics. Everybody wants to throw this bullshit, but this is attraction rather than promotion. Listen, you need to stop taking shit out of the big book out of context. Our 12th step says that we tried to carry this message to other alcoholics. You with me? You look at the people on these service committees that have done this thing. You look at the little new guys with just a couple of weeks, couple of months sobriety, doing H&I out here pouring coffee and working the coffee. That's service work, folks, and those cats are going to stay sober. Yes. And that's what I couldn't do for 8 years. Because I wouldn't do that shit. Because you see, you've got to understand, my case is different. But my case is different. I realize that they can do the little service work. Oh, shit. November 13th, 87. It's colder than hell up in Dallas, Texas. But it's a dry cold. You know. What is this? What is this for shit? Just a dry heat. And I've got a stack of return checks and the beast that the nice lady I'm dating has left. Bless her heart, you know. And you know, it's just all of it. I'm working. I have some employment because my brother has hired me. That's the only reason I'm not on the street. And the depression's choking me to death, and nothing will work. And it stopped working for me. The cocaine won't work anymore. All I do now is get paranoid. Y'all know that. I'm too afraid to go in the store and get food. I'm convinced that them cats and Kroger are connected. You know what I mean? And I can't. Jesus, terrible. And the alcohol won't work because it's getting me too loaded, and I'm not having a happy day. And it's nearly Christmas, and I know there won't be any Christmas stuff this year. Nobody's going to send me any Christmas cards. And I take a bottle of pills and some alcohol and try to commit suicide, like so many of y'all have tried to do. And grace of God, I believe that divine intervention, that attempt failed. I heard a voice say, yes, it was, I'm sure, in my head, Chris, you never really gave those cats down in the fellowships a chance. You know, you ran the fellowship for 8 years and you never even bought a big book, for Christ's sake. Why don't you try it one more time? And if it doesn't work, you can go ahead and kill yourself. The next day, I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous at 6 o'clock in the evening. I sat outside the club and watched the cats go in, and I was so sick to think that this is where the Alcoholics Anonymous, for Christ's sake. I owe everybody in the world. I'm driving an old beat-up pickup truck. I haven't got an inspection sticker. I've got no insurance. My life absolutely sucks big ones, but I'm embarrassed to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. Unbelievable. And I walk into that meeting, and something's different, and they're all carrying big books. And I said, what is this, a big book study? He said, no, this is an open discussion, but we bring the topic out of the big book. What a concept. And they all had big books, and they were talking to me about the set. Now, guys, they said it right in there, and absolutely. Sometimes when I speak from the podium, y'all think, oh, well, you can't be that harsh with the newcomer. They weren't harsh with me at all. They sat down there, and a good-looking woman laid up next to me, and she put her arm around me, and they loved me, folks. I stunk. I hadn't bathed. And she cleaned up my coffee as I spilled it. I sat in that meeting and detoxed that night, and they took care of me. And the old-timer said, Chris, are you ready to get sober? And I made the mistake of saying something stupid like, well, you know, one day at a time. So, Chris, old buddy, next time I ask you a yes or no question, I want a yes or no answer. See, buddy, that's another thing we've taken out of context. The book says we live life one day at a time. It says we make a commitment that we want to stay sober. And they asked me finally down to brass tacks, do you want to do this deal or not? Are you ready to have a different life? Are you tired of living like an animal? I mean, Jesus Christ, Chris, you one month you're eating out of dumpsters, the next month you've got a great job ahead of you and everything's going great and you pull it all down on top of you. And life is absolutely not fun. Are you ready to have something different? And I said, yes. And I had me crying there. And they were right. They were so kind about it, but at the same time, they were very forceful. They were very understanding. What we do here in this group is we work the steps. And if you're going to get a sponsor and you're going to work the steps, and we can promise you that you're going to have a spiritual experience that will change your life forever. And I said, I think you're a liar. They said, we don't care if you think we're a liar. We don't give a rat's ass. We're not here to entertain you. Do you want what we have? And I looked around the room, and there was this good-looking blonde, and I said, yeah. No, guys, I was done. I was done. I said, absolutely. Nikki, this afternoon in the workshop, talked about being convinced of your innermost self and hitting your bottom. I'd hit my bottom. Less than 24 hours before that, I'd tried to commit suicide. And now I'm sitting here playing word games with these people. No, I see what's happening. Absolutely. You betcha. I'll do this deal. And I got to tell you, every night, my ass was in that meeting at 6 o'clock with those old-timers. And they said, Chris, you show up 30 minutes early, and we'll start doing the work. And you're going to do service work, and you're going to get on the committee here. We need somebody to be on the cleanup committee. I said, listen, I got to draw the line here someplace, you know. I mean, I'll be on your committees, you know, but I'm not doing this cleanup shit. You know, I mean, I don't smoke, you know. I'm not going to clean up your ass. I'm not going to do it. They said, Chris, do you want to stay sober? They opened the door, and it says, Chris Raymer, meet Mr. Hoover, the vacuum cleaner. You know, and he's in the dealing. He says... Let me tell you guys, that week, I said, fine, I'll do it. I was pissed. You know, I'm not going to like it, but I'll do it. And I came in the next day, I took off from my job. I owned a little business, right? It was bankrupt, but I owned it, so I could take off anytime I wanted to. And I went down there, and I cleaned that club from top to bottom. And I said, I'll show them, sons. I'll show them exactly what a good egg Listen, let me tell you, and I did too. I cleaned that place with a toothbrush. And those people started filing in at 6 o'clock, and I was sitting back there with a cup of coffee. And I tell you, the little lady came in, and she says, she had tears in her eyes. She says, who cleaned this place? I did. You want to talk about instant self-esteem? You start doing something for somebody else for a change and watch your self-esteem go through the roof. I didn't have to stand in front of any mirror and say, I am a good boy, I am a good boy. I did that with a guy in Denton. I find myself standing in front of the mirror, right? Butt naked. I do have a big dick. I'm sorry. I'm proof positive that positive affirmations don't work. And I don't know. Let me tell you real quick, because we're going to run out of time. Let me tell you what happened. I started working the steps with the cat, and I'm on the fourth step. I'm on the fourth column of the fourth step where I finally get to see that Chris Raymer is the root of the problem. You know, that I'm starting the ball rolling, and it's me, you know? That it wasn't about her and what they did. It was about me, see? And I get to look at this stuff, and the miracle begins to take place. Now, I got to tell you, 2 weeks into recovery, I got out of my truck in North Texas. I told some of y'all this. It's on tape. Y'all know what I'm talking about. But I had a spiritual experience. I got out of my truck in North Texas, and there's not a breath of air up there. And I get out of my truck, and I have to hold on to the side of the truck because I'm overcome with what the book talks about a new God conscious. I am absolutely convinced to my innermost self that I'll never drink or do cocaine again. I knew for a fact that the obsession had been removed. I don't know when it was removed. It could have happened the first week. I don't know. I just know that I'm surrounded by liquor stores and my drug dealer lives in the apartment complex where I live, and I don't want to use. The promises that says are going to take place took place. I've been placed in a position of neutrality. 2 weeks into recovery, folks, the miracle begins to take place in my life. No, and we need... And I talk about this from the podium, and everybody wants to come up after. You have a lot of people that want to come up, and they want to tell me that all that couldn't possibly have happened to you, Chris. What you were experienced was a pink cloud. Don't do it to me. I'm going to tell you, we did it on a little spirituality workshop we did earlier. I don't do pink clouds. I do God's grace, and I believe that's exactly what takes place with us. Listen, folks, God knows that we don't have months and months and months to get some comfort. That's why we come in here and seemingly don't have to do much of anything, and we get touched, and we get this place where we get comfortable in our own skin, and that's God's grace. Bill Wilson worked the steps, guys. He was on his ninth day in Towns Hospital. He was working the steps when he was still in detox when he had his spiritual experience. Dr. Bob was a little less than 10 days sober, June 10th, right, was the last time he had his drink. He went out and finished his amends, and he began to have his spiritual experience. Bill D. did it in less than 7 days. Now, you with me? The early guys in AA, the first 100 that got sober, all had spiritual experiences in less than a month. But we come in these goddamn fellowships and tell people to take their time to work the steps. If you have time to work the steps, I'm going to say it again, you're probably not one of us. Come on, guys. You know, some of these old crusty sons of bitch and alcoholics that are just straight alcoholics, maybe they got a little time under their belt. Maybe they can take their time to do this. I don't know, but I'm going to tell you this, folks. A crack addict, a cocaine addict, you get this cat coming into the meat and still stinking of a pipe, I guarantee you, if you don't get him and get him to God quick, he's gone. We've seen it too many times. And here's the cool thing. You don't have to fix what's wrong with that crack addict. You don't have to do a damn thing except relay the same message that was relayed to you. Show him where the big book is, help him get a sponsor, sit his little ass down, get him focused, and help him start to work the steps. That's it. And then you'll get to watch the greatest miracle that we have. You'll get to watch another alcoholic and addict sit right across the table from you, and that light will come on in his eyes and says, Jesus Christ, you mean I don't ever have to drink or drug again as long as I live? And you'll sit there and go, yes, right. As long as you do what the book says and carry it back to another alcoholic, it's your turn now to help carry the message. You can keep this miracle. And for the rest of your life, you can stay sober. You don't ever have to worry about another trigger. You don't ever have to worry about any of this other half of this bullshit about relapse, being part of the fellowship, being part of the program. That's a damn lie. I got to tell you, folks, there's a lot of cats out there in the fellowship. I'm going to wind this down real quick. You know, I had this spiritual experience, and I immediately went into the fellowship and started talking about this spiritual experience. And no crew came up to me and said, you know, Chris, I'd lay low on this spiritual experience thing. You know, I wouldn't talk so much about it in the meetings. You know, you just might. You see, this man had a lot of knowledge about the fellowship, but he didn't have much experience in the fellowship. Yo, with me? There's a difference between knowledge and experience. I always forget that these guys are over here. You know, what is this? They're ready to throw in things for you about knowledge versus experience, as you guys can understand. Once you have this miracle called a spiritual experience and the desire to use cocaine is removed from you, the depression goes away and the boredom is fixed and you start getting excited about your life and you realize it's not a temporary thing. You realize that you're on solid footing, that you're there to do what God wants you to do now. Y'all with me? Okay, but now if I'm sitting around the room, what, you ought to be up here watching this shit. You know, I got a whole bunch of you shaking your head like this. You couch folks, sons of bitches, listen to what I'm saying. Because this is exactly what I'm talking about. There's a whole bunch of you in this room that have had this experience, and you know exactly what I'm talking about, and I couldn't explain it even. You don't have to explain it to somebody that's had the experience. All you got to do is look at them and go, huh? And they go, well, yes. And they know exactly what you're talking about. Yes? But if you haven't had the experience, if you're still depressed, if you're still bored, you're still obsessing about cocaine, and you haven't had it, then everybody wants to shy away. See, nobody wants to just call a spade a spade. You haven't had the spiritual experience. Well, brother, you're either going to recover or you're not. There's not a such thing as being a little bit recovered. The obsession is either been removed from you or it has not. I don't know how we can make it any clearer than this. Let me give you this little story real quick. I had this little friend named Edward Sanders. He's in jail now. He won't mind me using his last name. He's a good little buckaroo. We were high school buddies, junior high school buddies. He lived right across the street from us. We grew up on a little street down in Kerrville, Texas called Goat Creek Road. Ugh, I can't believe it. Yeah, well, he's talking about Appalachia. Anyway, one summer, Edward, I don't know how old we are, 14, 15, Edward Sanders, we were a little older. We were late bloomers, all of us. We were kind of nerds, and I was real skinny, and I had an identical twin brother, and we piled around all summer long. Anyway, this guy goes to this family reunion, and they're in this bar, and there's this girl in there, and they hook up, and Edward gets some pokey pokey, okay? Edward has sex. He comes back that night after the family reunion. He's tapping on the window. It's late at night, 12 o'clock at night. He's tapping on the window. He says, Chris, you got... Myers, he says, my brother. He says, come on, y'all got to come outside. We pushed his little... He had a little Honda. We pushed it out in the front, up by Goat Creek Road, so we wouldn't disturb anybody. He says, you guys are not going to believe what took place. He says, I met this girl. And we said, no. And he said, and we... Well, I became a man tonight. So shit. And he talked about it. He told us all the day, guys, we were up till nearly dawn talking about this. And for the rest of the summer, stick with me, for the rest of the summer, that's all we did. We'd be walking down Goat Creek Road, busting beer bottles and shit, just killing time. And we said, Edward, tell us about the girl again. Because I'd seen the Playboys and stuff. I see that, but I, come on, just tell us about the girl again. And he said, well, you know, we ended up, no, 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 it's the very beginning. when you first walked in, I want to know everything about this thing called sex. I got no experience. I want as much knowledge about this because I'm going to, one of these days, I'm going to get lucky and I need to know what I'm, okay. That winter, I'm in the food business, right? And there's this hefty little pantry girl that's working back there. And for, I don't know if they paid her or what, but she had mercy on me. We worked the deal. Everybody's got to do it the first time sometime. It's just like the cocaine. You know, there's a learning curve there. There's a learning curve. I worked a deal with a guy, one of my best friends. He was going to drive a station wagon. Me and her were going to get in the back of the station wagon, and she was going to show me the ropes. She was going to tell me how to show the deal. And so we went out, drove out 20 miles the other side of town. Didn't take long. Drove back 20 miles. Boom, boom, boom. Now listen, now here's the point I want to make. And the guy lets me out on Gold Creek Road in front of my house, and I'm standing in the middle of this road, and it's colder than hell outside, and I got a big full moon up there, and I'm... Man. And I marched right straight. I could have... My house is over here. His house is over here. I look at my house and I said, no, I got to get this stuff straight now. And I went right straight to his house, and I woke his ass up, and I said, Eddard, we got to talk. He said, buddy, I'm sleeping. We'll talk in the morning. He says, no, we got to talk now. Buddy, I said, you left out lots of shit. You know what I mean? Now I got to be. I mean, what's up with that smell, for Christ's sake? What is this? What is... I sure hope my mama don't hear this thing. But I was freaked out. One minute I had a lot of knowledge about this thing. I could tell you how it works. And the next minute, I got some experience. Now, which one do you want to talk to? You know, you want to know the experience, you find somebody that's had the experience, right? That's the same problem we're having in this fellowship right now. We got a lot of people around the periphery who are here taking up seats, drinking the coffee, talking, but they're not having the same experience we are. And so some little new guy comes in and says, no, I want to do the work, and starts doing the work, and he gets excited about this deal, and he begins to have a spiritual experience, and everybody in the place wants to shoot his ass down. Oh, you're working those steps way too fast. Unbelievable. Oh, you can't possibly have had a spiritual experience that quick. Oh, yeah. Oh, who died and left you God? We just talked about the co-founders having it within a week, but it was good enough for Bill and Dr. Bob, you know, a goddamn out-of-work stockbroker and a butt doctor, for Christ's sake. But for us, we're just gonna... Guys, we keep mixing the therapy back in. Listen, folks, I gotta tell you, 2 weeks into this fellowship, I had a spiritual experience, and the desire to drink and drug left me, and it's not returned in 12 years. I don't know what to... Briefly, let me just tell you straight. I still work on lots of other issues. My little stepson and me, we've locked some horns, and I don't know, still know much about raising a little kid. And I got to tell you, I love him dearly, and we're getting better. But I see a therapist around that. You with me? I got some issues that I need to deal with. Therapy is primo. Get it if you can get it. Those things do take some time to work through. But the steps, you can work Drowning Man, like the book says. One of the things that we see around the fellowship so much is that we don't see too many people that are desperate. Your ass is on fire when you get here, and we help you put it out, and then you go play. But we don't have anybody to reel you back in again, you see? And that's the problem. We don't want to piss anybody off. You know, you can't keep the crack addict sober. No, you can't. But you can goddamn sure tell him the truth. You can tell him the truth. You can tell him that the shenanigans he's pulling, that it's not okay that he missed the meeting, that it's not okay he showed up late, that it absolutely is not okay that he's not working the steps. You can tell him that it's not okay that he goes out and buys a new car when he's got all these goddamn demands hanging over his head back over here. And when it comes time to do the H&I and get the committee, and his little ass is not around, it is your responsibility to tell him, no, you will be around. Or you'll go find someplace else to play. If you want to die, that's your business. I just don't want to watch it. I just don't want to watch it. Let me tell you what's happening in Alcoholics Anonymous right now, and I don't want to see the same thing infect this fellowship. AA's had 65 years to screw it up, folks. We're 18, buddy. We're in our infancy. Let's turn the tide now and not make the same mistakes. Box 459, a couple of months ago, had this AA's little newsletter. They came out with this great little article about intergroups. One of the articles in intergroups says, this guy talks about it, he says, it takes sometimes, y'all know what intergroups are, they're little clearinghouses. You know, you call intergroup if you want somebody to go do a 12-step meeting. That's it. He said, sometimes it takes up to 20 calls to find an alcoholic willing to go to do a 12-step call. Guys, you know, we just got to get straight here. We got to get on the same page. The book says in Bill's story that unless I grow spiritually through work and self-sacrifice for others, I cannot stay sober through the certain trials and low spots ahead. Guys, I mean, let's just get straight with it. Do you think for a second that your life is going to get perfect when you get sober? We're still going to have troubles, but you can get through that with grace and dignity if you're out there carrying the torch, helping other alcoholics and addicts get sober. That was Bill Wilson, Dr. Bob's legacy to us. Bill Wilson couldn't stay sober, got told of Dr. Bob, they stayed sober together. They found alcoholic number 3, number 4, number 5. Look at this room! Okay, but how did you get here? You got here because somebody reached out a hand and helped you, right? So we got to get straight. What are you doing today to help the alcoholic and the drug addict get sober? Are you going to a couple of meetings a day and sitting on the back and leaving early and coming late and just basically going to a meeting and chalking off another one? Let me just tell you something, folks. You're not helping anybody when you do that. I appreciate you being in the meeting, but you've got to get straight. The meeting makers aren't making it. The people out there on the firing line of life helping other alcoholics and addicts get sober are making it. God, if we had a solution for AIDS right here, how many people do you think would be kicking their butts to try to get up here to get it? Well, I got to tell you this, folks. I've done a lot of things, and I'm not putting down AIDS, and I'm not, please, it's a terrible illness. But I got to tell you, I run a little store at this treatment center, and I get to watch the cats come in. You don't have to tell me the men and women who are crack addicts that come into that facility. You don't have to tell me. I can see it on their face. And they'll walk in, and they won't look me in the face. They'll look down at the floor right in front of the register and ask me the questions, because they can't look me in the face. Because they're so goddamn burned by the street. They've been in the houses. They've done what they had to do to get the drug. They're so full of shame and guilt they can't stand it. They want to die. And we got the solution. And we got the absolute guaranteed solution. But we won't share it with anybody. Because we're too goddamn afraid about what somebody next to us is going to say. We gotta take this fellowship and run with it, folks, because this is the only thing that's gonna save us, Cocaine Anonymous. We've got the literature, we know what we need to do. We go into goddamn meetings to listen to people talk about all the escapades and how much crack they smoked and how many times they got fucked and this and that and the other. Jesus Christ, if you think it was so much fun, go do it again! We don't have time for that. We don't have time for that, folks. There's a place to share those war stories, I can assure you. In our meetings, it's not. I've said it 1,000 times, folks. Come early before if you want to share that shit. Come late. Stay late. Go to fucking Denny's if you want to. But don't, for an hour time in our fellowship, let's talk about God and the steps. If you're having trouble, folks, don't think I'm making fun of you. Let me get this straight, and I'm going to let you guys go. Please, I'm talking to a room full of people, and every one of you, from the best-looking woman in this place to the homeliest guy. And God, we've got some of you in here, I guarantee you. Every single one of you have got problems. And I'm not making fun of any of those. But I'm going to tell you this. We as a fellowship don't know what you need to do with those problems. We are not equipped for that. We are not professionals. We do know how you can get connected to the power of God. And God does know what you need to do with that. Folks, I don't know if you need to stay in that relationship. I don't know if you need to move. I don't know if you need to go back to school. I don't know if you need to get that job. I don't know what you need to do. I do know that if you get connected to God in prayer and meditation in the morning, God will tell you exactly what you need to know. That's my experience. My sponsor, Mark Houston, talks about it, us being spearheads. It's on page 49, folks. We're supposed to be the spearheads of God's ever-advancing creation. We're the strongest people on earth. You give me a cocaine addict, and I'll show you somebody that can do it, you know? We've been through the shitter. We've been tempered by fire, for Christ's sake. What we have to do is direct that energy and direct that power into what God wants us to do. And I got to tell you something, folks. We will change this world. It's a given. But if you don't want to be a part, that's cool too. If you think all this fellowship's about is a place to come piss and moan about your goddamn problems, you've missed it. You've missed the boat. Here's what you do. If you haven't had a spiritual experience, you find a sponsor that has had a spiritual experience, and you start doing the work, and I can guarantee you within a very short period of time, you will have your own spiritual experience. At the same time, actively start working with other alcoholics. Either a week or 2 days, whatever, it's your time right now. If you're a week sober, I can promise you, we've got a couple over here that are less than 6 days sober. Get your ass over here and tell them how to stay sober. Come on. Pull them with a vision. The book says that we're having a new employer, a third step prayer, says God's going to remove your difficulty. All you've got to do is get off your butt and do what you said you'd do for God. Be an instrument of His divine guidance. Be a willing instrument. You don't have to come up and speak from the podium if you don't want to. If you want to, get on an HMI. Get on a service committee. Do something. And I tell you, God will use you. And the miracle will take place. I'm sitting there in that AA meeting after I got sober and I had that spiritual experience and I'm looking around and says, God, I don't understand it. I got that good-looking woman waiting for me out in the lobby. Where in the hell did she come from? You with me? All of a sudden the money started coming in and the financial stuff started getting taken care of. And guys, the spiritual experience is there to change you at a cellular level. It is so, so profound when it takes place. And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about. But it's by helping others that we get to keep it. If you're in a bad place tonight, I heard Tommy tell a lady last night sitting back in a corner, she's in a bad place, she's lonely, she's this, go find an alcoholic to work with. She dissed him, she just walked away. That's not what she wanted to hear. She wanted somebody to sit there and validate her bullshit. I know you're lonely. I know you're full of guilt. I know you're full of shame. You want to know how to get past it? Work the steps. Go find somebody. I can promise you, you can find somebody here that's in worse shape than you are. You go do that, guys, and I guarantee you, God's grace will blow you out of the water. I've said it every time I've spoke, folks, and I'm going to tell you. What God's done in my life, it makes me weep when I think about it. And I know I don't have a perfect life. I still got some problems. But I got to tell you, folks, I ride bicycles. With all the cocaine I was supposed to do and all the bone stuff in my little heart, I'm not supposed to be doing any of that. And God's taken me past that and allowed me to do that. I'm so painfully shy that when I get asked to speak, I puke for months before it up. They asked me tonight. Everybody's asked some of us, Chris, you puke yet? Uh-huh. I did. I don't like to do this. I don't want to do this. This is God's stuff. God wants you happy, joyous, and free. And God's grace falls evenly on every one of you. And that means God wants you in a great, healthy relationship. And that means God wants you having some money in your pocket and a credit card so you can come to these kind of conferences. You hear me? That's a fact. I'm so sick and tired of everybody looking the other way and letting everybody off the hook. If you're not happy, folks, it's because you've walked away from this deal or you're not doing the things necessary to get connected. One last thing. I'm over. They don't go up and get a cup of coffee and shake their head. They say, excuse me just a minute. Excuse me. We'll talk about that happy horse shit later. Right now, though, I'd like to tell you about a little miracle that took place in my life, you know? And the newcomer's going to catch hold of this and say, yeah, that's what this is about. This is a place where you go share the good stuff, not the bad stuff. Yes, that's what we need. I'll say it again and end with it. God's grace falls evenly on all of us, folks. AA is a spiritual program whereby we get connected to God. AA, Cocaine Anonymous, is not therapy. It's a life-changing event. I know some of you don't agree with that. You're going to get drunk anyway, brother. Because if you haven't put two and two together and realized that you're the most selfish, self-centered son of a gun, and that selfishness and self-centered is what binds me, what holds me away from God, I got to get out of myself. You know, it just blows me away. Well, I've got to talk about that relationship. If I don't, no. What you got to do is talk about the newcomer that just walked in the room that's still shaking from the pipe. Yes, yes. See? And then right after the meeting, we're going to go to Denny's, and I want to hear all about that relationship. Because listen, folks, I guess it's men in this fellowship that taught me to be the businessman that I am today. Everything that I have good in my life today comes from the fellowship of AA and Cocaine Anonymous. Everything. Everything. But we don't talk about it in our meetings. In the meetings, we talk about God and the steps. I love every one of you. Thank you so much.